Hello, this is your Polycast for Tuesday, June 14th, Flag Day. It's your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, people in Minnesota consider security and the causes of violence after Orlando, and St. Paul has a new police chief. Earl Potter, the president of St. Cloud State University, has been killed in a car crash. The Minnesota State Patrol says the crash happened around 5:30 yesterday afternoon in Brooklyn Center on Interstate 694. Potter was on the way to a foundation board meeting in the Twin Cities. The union that represents nearly 5,000 nurses at Allina Health in the Twin Cities says negotiators made no progress in talks with the federal mediator yesterday. Matt Sepik reports.
The Minnesota Nurses Association says nurses at four hospitals and the Phillips Eye Institute still plan to walk off the job Sunday morning. Last week, the union submitted a strike notice after the two sides could not reach an agreement about health care coverage. The company wants to shift the nurses onto the plan its other employees receive, saying that would save $10 million a year. But nurses say their out-of-pocket costs would surge. The union says no further negotiating sessions are planned. Allina says the union is not serious about resolving key issues and will staff its hospitals with replacement nurses if the strike goes ahead. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Saying it's deeply concerned about mining near the boundary waters, the U.S. Forest Service says it's considering withholding consent to renew mining leases near the wilderness. Dan Crocker reports.
Twin Metals Minnesota wants to renew two leases near Ely. The company is considering a huge underground mine for copper and nickel. Frank Ongaro with the industry group Mining Minnesota says the move could have a chilling effect on other mining companies exploring in the area.
This is not about just Twin Metals. This is a terrible precedent for any company looking at mineral development and job creation in that watershed.
The Forest Service will take 30 days of public comment and says it has not made a final decision. Opponents of mining near the boundary waters praised the announcement. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
The $1.8 million award to former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura in a defamation case has been overturned. Brian Baxt has more.
The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals is sending Ventura's case back to a lower court. He had sued over an unflattering mention in the best-selling American Sniper autobiography written by now-deceased Navy SEAL Chris Kyle. Ventura says a passage about him being knocked out by the author during an encounter in a bar never occurred. He won his case against Kyle's widow in 2014. But the appeals panel says a jury should not have heard that the book publisher's insurance policy may have covered any damages. And the appeals judges say Ventura wasn't entitled to enhanced damages that jurors also awarded. It's not clear what happens next. Neither side in the legal dispute immediately weighed in. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A state board has cleared the way for new Minneapolis school superintendent Ed Graff to assume his position. Solveig Wastvedt reports.
Ed Graff did not meet Minnesota criteria for a superintendent's license, so he needed a variance from the Board of School Administrators. He plans to take graduate courses at the University of Minnesota over the next year to fulfill state licensing requirements. Graff says he's meeting with district staff on a visit to Minneapolis this week.
There's a lot of excitement and positive opportunities ahead of us. I also heard people wanting to hear a little bit about my vision for addressing the culture and what we think is needed to support students.
Graff starts as Minneapolis superintendent July 1st. Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The attack on a gay nightclub in Orlando over the weekend is having an impact across the country, including here in Minnesota. With 2 weeks until the annual Twin Cities Pride Parade, festival organizers and others are doing what they can to increase security. But they're also hoping the grief the community is feeling now will transform into action to address the root causes of violence. John Collins has the story.
Part of Twin Cities Pride's mission has always been to create a safe space for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Minnesotans who face discrimination or threats. But safety may be even more of a concern following this weekend's attack in Orlando. Dot Belsler is the executive director of Twin Cities Pride. She declined to comment on specific security measures the festival may adopt in response to the attack, but says Pride organizers plan to beef up this year's security presence.
You know, so most of our security measures are kind of behind the scenes. People aren't aware of what we have on site in the festival and the parade. and we'll be working more closely with MPD and the park police to make sure that our security is more visible this year.
In addition to the parade and festival in Loring Park, Pride celebrations include bars and other venues. Ken Darling is the owner of Lush in Northeast Minneapolis. Darling says he and other business owners involved in Pride will be meeting with police later this week to talk about security. But he knows there's only so much they can do.
These by definition, these events are random and they're rare and they're extreme, and there isn't really a security response to them, and we know that. But having said that, we have to be more vigilant, we have to be more aware, but we also can't be fearful. We can't alter our lives.
Darling hopes the Orlando attacks will push people to take action.
This is, you know, an opportunity for us to really look at our gun laws, to look at these kind of extremist ideologies and how they're inspiring this kind of violence. But at this kind of micro level of how does one particular establishment make itself more secure, I can't imagine that even if we had an armed guard at Lush that we would be any safer.
Security staff can be trained to notice warning signs. For instance, an attacker casing the business. But there's no evidence that armed guards would reduce the overall level of violence in a society. That's according to William Braniff, the executive director of the National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism at the University of Maryland.
It might deter an adversary from attacking that one establishment, but they might just go down the road to the next target that's softer and target there. So it helps the establishment out. It doesn't necessarily help the community more generally out.
Pride organizer Belsler says the community and its allies have always gone into the streets in the past when they felt threatened or attacked. She expects a strong showing at Pride again this year.
Many people have said that they're afraid and they're not going to come out. And I think the general sense, though, in the community is that we will come out. This is our Pride and no one's going to take it from us.
The Twin Cities Pride Festival is scheduled to take place on June 25th and 26th at Loring Park in Minneapolis. John Collins, Minnesota Public Radio News.
St. Paul will officially have a new police chief in about a week. Mayor Chris Coleman has appointed veteran cop Todd Axtell, and he'll be up for city council confirmation next Wednesday. Axtell is one of the department's most well-known commanders and has a long history among the department's executive ranks. Tim Nelson has more.
Todd Axtell's roots in law enforcement stretch all the way back to small-town policing. He spent part of his childhood in Silver Bay on the North Shore, where his grandfather was a cop. He's worn the badge in Breezy Point and Pequot Lakes himself. And as the new chief of the state's second-largest police force, he says he's tried to keep a steady approach at every step of his law enforcement career.
My philosophy was simple. Get to know people before something bad happens. Build relationships and trust. It's a formula that's helped me in every aspect of my career. It also fueled my belief that community outreach is absolutely is critical in policing today.
That earned Axtell the top job in St. Paul, a department of nearly 800 people, including more than 600 officers. They field more than 250,000 calls for service a year, almost one for every one of the city's 300,000 residents. Mayor Chris Coleman says he talked to all five finalists vying for the job, and he was looking for someone with a strong command presence, established links to the community, and a sense of compassion. Coleman says Axtell has what he thinks the city needs in a top cop.
He has built incredible relationships in the community. He is a man of tremendous compassion, but also I've had a chance to personally observe him in command situations, and there is no doubt that this is a person that can command the St. Paul Police Department in the 21st century.
Axtell was one of four internal candidates for the top job and was widely considered the leading contender. He was a protege of then-Chief Bill Finney in the early 2000s and has worked at posts all over the department, most recently as the Assistant Chief for Operations with nearly 400 officers under his command. Finney was on hand to congratulate Axtell as the mayor announced his pick at the city library on Dale Street.
He has this overwhelming wholeness about his personality that you know that he's well-balanced and he's a problem solver. And that's what's so important. And he's able to solve problems without ruffling feathers.
But Axtell still may have some work to do. The department's top union leadership wasn't on hand at the announcement of Axtell's appointment, and the union president didn't respond to requests for comment. And the department Axtell has helped lead hasn't been without its own controversy. One of its patrol officers resigned earlier this year after suggesting on Facebook that motorists run down Black Lives Matter protesters in the street. Two shootings by police last year brought protesters out onto the street, and research by NPR News found that St. Paul police have been involved in about 1 in 5 fatal shootings by Minnesota police since 2008, a far higher proportion than any other department in the state. Rashad Turner, founder of the St. Paul chapter of Black Lives Matter, says he's dealt directly with Axtell and thinks his appointment is a good development for the city.
You know, we're going to have high expectations. We're going to continue to hold the police department accountable. So there are obviously a lot of injustices that we'll continue to try to tackle as a chapter with BLM. But I do think that Chief Axtell will do his best to listen to the community and make sure that he has the correct voices at the table as he's making decisions on what's best for the police department, what's best for the city of St. Paul.
Axtell is 48 and lives in St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood. He has 4 grandchildren and 2 kids. His son was sworn in as a St. Paul police officer himself in 2014. Axtell is scheduled to face a confirmation vote by the city council next week. If approved, he's expected to officially take command June 23rd. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.